Opening narration.
Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome to the Akhotra Dialogue. Today we're diving deep into the life and mind of someone truly unique, Susie Eddy Izzard.
Yeah, comedian, actor, activist, marathon runner. The list goes on. We're digging into her memoir, believe me. A memoir of love, death, and jazz chickens.
Great title.
Isn't it? And, you know, if you know Izzard, you probably think of the surreal comedy, maybe the high heels, the acting roles. Exactly. But the book, believe me, it really isn't your typical celebrity memoir. It's much more, well, it's a kind of a raw blueprint for resilience, actually.
A blueprint. Okay, I like that. And the core of that blueprint, the thing driving everything, seems to be this incredibly profound early trauma.
Absolutely central.
Yeah.
Her mother, Dorothy, died of cancer when Eddy was only six. 1968. And this loss, this grief, it becomes the absolute engine of her life.
An engine. Wow. Fueling everything from the comedy to running dozens of marathons.
That's what we want to unpack. So our mission really is to figure out how that foundational grief didn't break her, but somehow got transformed into this relentless energy.
Okay, so how did she turn pain into connection? How did she develop what she calls a marathon mindset to, you know, push past self-doubt?
Let's try and map out that architecture of resilience.
The chronological journey, the formative years.
So it all starts with that defining moment, losing her mother at six.
Yeah, and then immediately afterwards, she and her brother are sent off to these pretty rigid British boarding schools. St. Bede's was one.
Which must have just amplified that feeling of loss, created this instant sense of being an outsider.
Totally. A lifelong feeling, it seems. But what's really crucial, I think, is how that pain connected to her drive, her ambition.
Right.
There's this really poignant story in the memoir about young Eddy and her brother Mark. After their mother died, they tried to finish building this complex model railway set, something their mother had promised she'd help them with.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
Trying to build something intricate right after that kind of loss.
Exactly. And this act, you know, determined construction, carefully putting pieces together when your world's just shattered, it works as this powerful metaphor for her entire life.
Trying to build something worthwhile piece by piece, almost to connect back to what was lost through sheer effort.
Precisely. Whether it's a comedy show or running across a country, it's this relentless building, like a lifelong attempt to finish that model railway.
And where did that drive first show up, it seems like, in these two almost opposite directions?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Even as a kid, she had this secret desire to experiment with gender expression, what she later called her gender genie.
Okay.
But also this ambition to join the SS, you know, the British Special Air Service. Elite, yeah. Hyper-masculine.
That feels like a total contradiction.
On the surface, maybe, but I think it reveals the same core need, really. A craving for control, for wordiness, for discipline.
Ah, okay. So the SAS is about proving mettle, discipline, being undeniably capable.
Right, and the gender expression side is about, well, undeniable self-expression. Defiance, almost. Needing to be seen authentically through performance and proven capable through extreme discipline.
Kind of searching for structure and permission that vanished when her mother died. Interesting, the rise in the struggle.
And that search definitely hit some walls early on. She dropped out of university studying accounting, of all things.
Accounting, wow, okay.
Right? And then spent years in what she calls the wilderness, busking in Covent Garden, trying to get people to just stop and listen.
That sounds brutal.
Followed by the London stand-up circuit in the 80s, which was apparently just vicious, often really hostile crowds.
And she was struggling, right? Trying scripted jokes, dealing with undiagnosed dyslexia.
Yeah.
Just bombing night after night.
Yeah, sustained failure that would break most people. The material wasn't landing. Her surreal style just didn't fit the mold back then.
So what changed? How did she break through that?
Well, the sources suggest the failure was so intense, it actually forced a breakthrough. A point of, like, total frustration. It happened at the Banana Cabaret in Balham.
Okay, this is where it gets really good. What happened?
She was dying on stage, apparently, just completely bombing, and she just gave up on the script, threw it out the window, metaphorically.
You just started talking.
Pretty much. Started riffing on whatever popped into her head. History, philosophy, random absurdity. The famous Jazz Chickens idea came from moments like that.
Ah, so that's the origin, letting her own kind of chaotic mind take over.
Exactly. That unscripted chaos, trusting the weird connections in her own brain, that unlocked her signature style, stream of consciousness. It was her stopping trying to fit someone else's idea of comedy.
And this experience, this whole period, it solidified her philosophy about persistence, didn't it? The Izzard method.
Totally. She really pushes back against the idea of innate genius. It's not about being born brilliant.
It's about the work.
It's almost entirely about the work. She has this great quote, you know, the usual 10% inspiration, 90% perspiration.
Yeah.
She says, no, it's 1% inspiration and 99% moving things around. It's methodical. It's slogging.
Moving things around. I like that. And yeah. Failure in that model isn't, well, it isn't failure.
Exactly. It's just data, information. Something didn't work. Okay, take that data, move the pieces around, try again. It's iterative. Peak achievements and legacy.
Okay, so that persistence built the foundation.
Yeah.
But the big international breakthrough, that seems tied to another huge turning point, embracing her full self on stage.
Yes, around 1991, that critical decision to perform openly in makeup, dresses, high heels, integrating her identity fully into her public persona.
Which again, back then, that must have taken incredible guts.
Oh, absolutely. And the memoir is clear. This wasn't some calculated marketing ploy. It was genuine self-liberation. It just happened to resonate hugely.
But it forced her to develop that thick skin, right? That absolute clarity of purpose.
For sure. And that's when she coined the term she used at the time, action transvestite, which is brilliant, really.
How so?
It fuses those two early drives we talked about, the transvestite part, the defiant gender expression, combined with the action part, that SAS level drive and discipline. She basically carved out her own category.
Which led to that amazing line.
The one that defines so much. I am a professional transvestite, so I can run in heels.
Yes. It's funny, but it also forces you to accept all the parts at once. The performer, the runner, the boundary pusher.
Exactly. And that radical honesty, that vulnerability turned into strength, that's what connected globally. It led straight to the HBO special Dress to Kill in 98. Emmy Awards.
Cemented her international status.
And opened doors to serious acting roles, too, showing her range. Think The Riches, Valkyrie. Authenticity wasn't just personal. It became her defining professional strategy.
Core philosophy and values.
So if we try to boil down her core philosophy, what's at the heart of it?
Well, fundamentally, it seems very humanistic. There's this underlying optimism, a belief that deep down, most people are basically decent.
And that humor can fight extremism.
Yeah, that humor and dialogue are powerful tools against negativity. That connection matters.
And what about that idea of definite maybe? I find that intriguing.
Right. It's this blend of determination and flexibility. Like you could commit fully to a goal running the marathon, say, but you stay open to changing course if the data, the reality on the ground, tells you to.
Determined, but not rigid.
Exactly. Committed uncertainty. And underpinning all of it is this bias towards action over just thinking about things.
Putting yourself out there.
Yeah. The belief that you discover who you are and what you can do by doing difficult, even absurd things, not just by introspection. You learn by trying.
Three pivotal turning points.
Okay, so let's crystallize this.
Yeah.
If we had to pick three pivotal turning points that really shaped this whole trajectory.
Well, number one has to be the foundational one we started with, the loss of her mother. That's the event that lit the engine, created that deep need to achieve, to build, to connect. It's the source code, really.
Right, the absolute origin point.
Yeah.
Okay, what's number two?
I'd say the decision around 1991 to perform authentically, incorporating her gender expression fully on stage, coming out publicly in that way.
Why was that so pivotal?
Because it wasn't just personal liberation. It fundamentally changed her connection with the audience. It unlocked her international career. And it forced her to develop that resilience and clarity. It turned vulnerability into her unique selling point, you could say.
Okay, makes sense. And the third?
The endurance running. Starting with those 43 marathons in 51 days back in 2009.
How did that shift things?
It was the physical manifestation of her entire philosophy. She took the mental grit, honed in comedy, pushing through exhaustion, finding rhythm, using failure as data, and applied it to this seemingly impossible physical challenge.
Proving the marathon mindset wasn't just talk.
Exactly. It externalized her internal architecture of resilience. It showed that relentless, ordinary effort could yield extraordinary results. And it completely shifted her public image from brilliant entertainer to something more, an inspirational figure. It proved the philosophy in action.
Human lessons and reflection.
So stepping back from the specifics of comedy or running, What are the bigger human lessons here? What can, you know, someone listening take away from Izzard's journey?
I think one major thing is about resilience, obviously, but not just bouncing back. It's about how you use adversity. That pain, that loss, wasn't erased, but it was channeled into something incredibly productive and connective.
So it's about transformation, not just endurance.
Right. And related to that is the power of authenticity. Her story really demonstrates that trying to hide parts of yourself, trying to fit in, it often holds you back.
Whereas embracing your full self, even the parts that feel risky or different.
That's where the real power lies. It's liberating personally, sure, but it also creates this unique energy that connects with others. It makes space for other people to be more authentic too.
It's like giving permission.
Exactly. And maybe the most universal lesson is about finding meaning by connecting your personal struggles to something larger than yourself. Her drive, fueled by loss, led to entertaining millions, yes, but also to charity work, activism, advocating for understanding.
So pain channeled into service becomes purpose.
That seems to be the core equation. It connects your individual journey to a wider human experience.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, let's distill this down. If you remember three things from this deep dive into Eddie Izzard's life and philosophy, what should they be?
Right. First, let's go with an emotional insight. It's the truly transformative power of radical authenticity. Izzard's journey just proves that deciding to stop hiding who you are isn't just freeing for you. It actually creates room for others to breathe and be themselves too.
Okay. Authenticity is liberation for self and others. Got it. Next, an intellectual insight.
The strategic value of integration over specialization. Seriously, look at her career. Comedy, history, acting, languages, endurance running, politics. She combines seemingly unrelated things to create something uniquely valuable.
So don't just stick to one lane.
Right. Connect your dots. Your weird mix of interests might be your superpower.
Love that. Okay, finally, a universal insight, something practical we can all use.
Pain transformed through service to others becomes meaning. That initial trauma wasn't wasted. It became the fuel for connecting with audiences, for charity, for advocacy. It shows that you can take personal suffering and consciously decide to turn it into a source of contribution.
Closing narration.
Eddie Izzard's story really challenges us to look at our own obstacles, doesn't it? If profound loss can fuel that kind of ambition, what experience in your life, maybe one you see as negative, could you reframe? Could you transform it into the power source for whatever your next big challenge is?
Her life is just this powerful reminder, I think, that the world genuinely needs your authentic self with all its quirks and contradictions way more than it needs another copy of somebody else's success story. So maybe find your own version of a marathon, find your own high heels, whatever they are, and start running.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.